Okay, I want to be mindful of our time. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good Erev Chanukah. I'm going to ask for someone to be my timer, please, because I want Rabbi Fruchter to be able to start on time. We're probably at, are we at 10 past 5? I mean, 5 past 10.
7 after.
Let's go light, quick. What time is it?
7 after 10.
7 after, okay. I'm going to ask someone to please tell me when it is 10:21.
I don't know if that's helpful.
Would you actually tell me? That's better for me.
Is that better for me?
Without me to get distracted looking at it over and over again. Yeah, if you could tell me when it's 10:21, that would be perfect. If you have gotten the source sheets, there are three, not because it's more than what Rabbi Shulman had, just because it's larger, so you could see it better. Very into, the large print. Helps me to focus. Helps with ADD as well. You feel like you're moving and doing things. So, first of all, thank you so much, Rabbi Shulman, for asking me to present today. This is one of my favorite things to do, is to teach and learn. The reason I want to leave time at the end, about 6 or 7 minutes, is so that any thoughts that you have during my talk, any connections that you make, or questions or ideas that you want to bring up, I want to leave time for that at the end. That's so valuable to me. I feel like I learned so much when I hear other connections that people made while I was presenting something. So that space is important to me. So if you think of anything, keep it in mind. If there's something you're not understanding while I'm saying it, obviously ask. Okay, so what's light got to do with it? Origins and challenges of Yavan. Yavan is Greece. Where did Yavan come from? What is the challenge specifically, the challenges? And we're going to hone in on one specific challenge that I feel really, is this on, by the way? Okay. Really applies to modern Orthodoxy. I think that there's a very specific challenge of Yavan, of Greece, that affects those who constantly try to balance living in the world and living as a Torah Jew. Okay, here we go. I'm going to start with a short story, a maisa, as they say. A few years ago, I went to a meeting of one of my children in a modern Orthodox high school. You'll probably never figure out which one I'm talking about because my children have been to many different schools in many different places. But in any case, there were about 10 parents at that meeting. Most of the children of those parents were in 11th or 12th grade. And the meeting was an opportunity for parents to voice their concerns about their children and see if the school could do anything specific about it. And the main concern that was raised was how to help children be less stressed about getting into the university of their choice. Familiar situation. And the student and the parents were literally talking about how impossible it was to calm down their kids because their kids heard all these stories about students who were straight A students or A plus students and who did all sorts of extracurricular activities and put amazing things on their resumes and still didn't get into universities of their choice. And how could we possibly keep our children from getting stressed when they hear stories like that? So me, at that time, my child wasn't in any of those grades. And I'm sitting here looking and listening, and then just raised my finger. I just to point out to you, I was new to the I was new to the school. So anyway, I don't think it makes a difference. I think I would have said it anyway. But I was someone that everybody didn't know. And I looked around the table and I said, okay, this is a Jewish day school. Can we not look at this as an opportunity to say to our children, Hashem is involved. God is in our lives. And so you do your hishtadlut, you do whatever you can do, you put in the effort, and then the result is out of your hand. And for whatever reason you will get into or not get into, can we not bring that idea to our children? And literally, I look around the table, and the looks of all the people, I mean, were as if I had just said, and then they went on with talking about how stressed their kids were. Okay. Number one on your source sheet, I will get back to that story in about 11 minutes, probably. Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. Creation of the world, right? This is the first hint that we have of any of the exiles, and therefore also the exile of Yavan, of Greece. Right? Many of you may be familiar with this idea, v'haaretz hayta tohu vavohu v'choshech al pnei tehom. And the earth was tohu vavohu, however you want to understand that, a mess, confusion, stuff, v'choshech al pnei tehom, and there was darkness on the face of tehom, also whatever that is. Choshech. Okay? And then it goes on to say, and the Spirit of God hovered on whatever existed in the world before the world was there. Okay? And then Hashem said, Yihi Or, and there was light. If you go to number two, that is the Medrash. And if you go to the highlighted point, that tells us specifically what Yavan, the Greeks, were about. So this Medrash is telling us that that sentence is a hint to all of the four exiles that will come in the future. Tohu, it says, Ba'aretz hayah tohu zegalut Bavel, that's the Babylonian exile. And then Vo is referring to Prasu Madai, that's Persia, that's the Perm story. And then in highlighted at number two, V'choshech zegalut Yavan. Darkness is referring to Greek, to the Greeks, to the Greek exile, okay? Because they darkened the eyes of Yisrael with their decrees, okay? So the word darkness in the very beginning of the history of the world is referring to Greece. If you look at number three, the first inkling that we have, the first ancestor of Greece, who we know to be the ancestor of Greece, is mentioned as one of Noah's sons. Okay, so in the very first verse of creation of the world, we have a hint to all the exiles. And then Noah has three sons, and one of his sons is the father of the culture of Yavan. So if you look at number three, you see it says, Vayarcham Avi Knan, et Erbat Aviv. This is after the flood when Noah gets drunk, and his son Ham goes into the room, sees his father unclothed, does interesting things to him, but the bottom line is he sees him, and then he goes out and tells his brothers, Shem and Yafet, that their father is naked in the room. He tells us something about Ham that he went to tell his brothers that, and then highlighted in number three, Vayikach Shem Vayafet. So what do Shem and Yafet do? Those are the brothers who are there. Shem and Yafet, they take the simla, they take some sort of garment, Vayasimu Ashem, and they put it on their shoulders, the shoulders of the two of them. Then they walk backwards by chasu et ervat aviam, and they cover the nakedness of their father. Upneim achoranit, and they don't actually look at them; their faces are turned the other way, and they don't see their father's nakedness. Okay. Then Rashi there tells us number four by yikach shem vayefet. Shem and Yefet took. It says en kti vayikhu. It doesn't say they took the garment. It says he took. It's meant to refer to the idea that it was really Shem's idea. Shem was the leader, and Yefet went with him. Okay? Who is Yefet? Yefet, from Yefet will come Greece. Okay? This is an understanding from our sages that Yefet is the son from whom Yavan will come. If you look at the next page, it has number five, just above number five. Every ruling nation challenges us to refine a different aspect of our personal and national identity. This is very important to know. We are not subjugated. Thank you so much, Rabbi Shulman. Just by the way, this is in case you want to look at something besides me. It's a timeline, and this is where the story of Hanukkah happens on the timeline there. So, there's a step there. Yeah, I'm not used to going up and down the beam. Bereshit, this is the beginning of the world, and then we have Noah, and then way down here is the story of Hanukkah, actually after the story of Purim. Okay. It's important for us to know the exiles, the subjugation, the living under different governments is not a mistake. It challenges us in certain ways, and we're meant to meet that challenge purposefully. So that idea that each ruling nation challenges us to refine a different aspect of our personal national identity. Now, I only knew after I prepared this that apparently, Rabbi Shulman, you are the Bucky in Daniel. So I'm not even going to go there. But I am going to talk about Daniel's dream and just the animals that are represented there, because one of them refers to Yavan, to Greece. And the ideas for what's on this page for number 5, I got from this book. It's Rabbi Kagan, The Choice to Be. Excellent book, highly recommended. And then afterwards you can read my book. But this one is called The Choice to Be, and there are all sorts of makoros for what I put here in terms of relating how each animal related to a different galut. I just didn't put the sources in here. Okay, so Daniel, right? Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel has a dream, and also, Nebuchadnezzar first had a dream, and then Daniel interpreted that dream, which also referred to the Galiot. But specifically for this lesson, I want to focus on Daniel's dream, which had 4 animals or beasts: lion, bear, leopard, and some sort of beast with iron teeth, which represented the exile that we're in now. So if we go back to lion, what's the lion? So the lion is meant to represent Babel. That was the first, Nebuchadnezzar was destroyed the first temple. That was our first technical galut. And what is Babel? They have a desire for power. Now, interestingly enough, they did do some kind of worshiping in Babel, but they worshiped gods in order to help them obtain power. Like, that was the purpose of their worship. So they recognized that there were some forces beyond them, but they hoped to sort of harness those forces so that they could gain power. I'm not going to go too much into that because that's not the focus of this talk. The bear represented Persia, Prasu Madai, the desire for bodily pleasure. We could see that in Achashverosh, who he was, what he did, party, 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 right? So he also recognized some concept of a spirituality beyond himself, or beyond themselves, but they worshiped those gods as a way to get pleasure, okay? Then we get to the leopard. Leopard represented Greece, Yavan. Now, what did Yavan really want? So the Greeks really wanted honor, and honor separate from Hashem's honor. They wanted honor by defining the world through human understanding. So in other words, in a sense, man is God. And what happened with Greece is that their worship wasn't about really, I mean, even if you think about it, like, okay, Greek gods, but what were Greek gods? They were human. They were just superhumans. They were like human perfection. So what they really worshipped was the genius of man, separating from the real God. And by the time it gets to Edom, the beast with the iron teeth, there's a desire for destruction. There's an insensitivity, really, to all worship. There's not even like the dignity of man at that point. Okay, if you turn to the next page, 6, we have the rise of Yavan, Greece. So it seems sort of, if you just look at it from the outside, it seems like enlightenment, right? There's this philosophical exchange that's sweeping the world. There's political thought. There's the idea that people should be involved in the ruling of themselves, right? This whole idea of democracy, the seeds of that are from the Greeks. There's athletic competition, there's art, there's theater, appreciation of aesthetic beauty, all these things that we appreciate, right? And especially in modern Orthodoxy, we are involved in these things. We appreciate these things. And yet, what was happening at the same time, if you look at the dark results, infanticide was common. If a baby was born that just didn't fit into the family for whatever reason, the child was deformed, or maybe they just didn't want to feed another mouth, it was very common to just leave a baby out in a bottle, in the cold, allow babies to die. This was regular practice in this culture. Adultery was common. There wasn't any real respect for marriage, institutionalized prostitution, celebrated man-boy relations. There was so much immorality that was rampant. So what went wrong? Look at number 7. To understand what went wrong, we have to go back to that original, the predecessor of Yavan. Who was the predecessor? Yefes. So when Noah wakes up, number 7, Noah wakes up from his, when he gets sober, and he realizes what happens. So he says, Arur Canaan, so he curses Canaan, who's the son of Ham, okay? And then He blesses shame. The bless is actually the god of shame. Okay? And then if you look at the highlighted part, Yeft Elohim LeYefet. Beauty is given to Yefet. His name means beauty. Yafet, Yefet. Beauty is given. Vayishkon bo alei shem. And he will dwell in the tents of shame. You want to say something?
Or did... 21.
Oh, thank you. Okay, that's a good thing to say. Okay. Okay.
10 more minutes according to my watch.
Okay. So beauty, this concept, it makes so much sense. That is the essence of Yefet, is all of this beauty. But what's the bracha that's given to Yefet? Vayishkan be'ohalei shame. And he shall dwell in the tents of shame. That is the bracha that's given to him. In other words, you're going to be your best self when you dwell where? In the tents of shame. So if you turn the next page, at the top it says, Yefet is blessed by Hashem to dwell in the tents of shame. Tents are where we learn and live Torah. If you think about it, right? Yaakov was Yoshev HaHalim. What did that mean? He was studying. Why? He was studying as a means of connecting to Hashem. And this is the piece that was missing in Yavan. In Greece, in the culture that was pervading, and that's why there was so much of that darkness. You know, there's this idea, and we can get it because it's in our culture today. Sometimes genius excuses immoral behavior. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, he has, you know, tons of affairs and does all the crap, but, like, he's a genius. It's like, no. Genius does not excuse immoral behavior. That is Yefet on its own, not living in the tents of shame. And that was Yavan. So the genius, in a sense, excuse that. The purpose of our study, and this is what I want to focus on, purpose of studying Torah needs to be in order to live with allegiance to Hashem. This is very, very important. When we study, we say, Lilmod ulalamed, right? What's that? Teaching. What are we doing with Torah? Teaching, learning, teaching, lishmar velasot, we're keeping and doing it, ulakayim, et kol dibrei talmud Torah techa b'yahava. There's a whole, it's not just study. It's study for teaching and for being connected to Hashem and doing his Torah. So number 8, I had to have 8 numbers here, that's why I did 8. Okay. What were the decrees that the Greeks did? They wanted to eradicate behaviors that held us in allegiance to Hashem. That's why there was no Shabbat, no Rosh Chodesh, no Brit Milah, but that wasn't enough. There was also no study of Torah, which seems crazy because they actually thought the Torah was so interesting to the point that they had it translated. The first translation ever of the Torah, which was a dark time for the Jewish people. They wanted to learn the Torah. But when they realized that our learning of Torah is not just an intellectual exercise, they realized that learning Torah was a threat to them. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole idea of dreidel, pretending like they were learning Torah. If you turn to the last page, so how do we meet the challenge of Yavan? We behave in ways that display allegiance to Hashem. Pirkei Avot tells us, Have az kenamer, I'm on the last page, be bold like a leopard to do the will of God. So interesting that leopard is used. Bold means strong or determined, and Rav Hirsch there says that that word is used when it has to do with resisting evil. And we can only resist evil when we are living in the tents of shame, when we know that everything is contained inside of Hashem. So we should not be learning Torah as an intellectual exercise. That will lead to what Yavan was doing. There is an imperative understanding, which I'm not going to go through now because we don't have time, but it's basically kavanot. We should have kavanah. The same way we have kavanah when we daven, we should have a kavanah when we learn Torah, that it's a way to connect to Hashem. And I'm going to leave you with the last one without any explanation. Vayomer Elokim Yihi'ar, Vayihi'ar. What was the response to what the world looked like before it was formed? Hashem put light into the world, and the B'nai, there's a lot of S's in there. I might have put too many S's. B'nai Yisachar says that the original light is hidden in the 36 lights of Hanukkah, which, without a further explanation of that, tells me there's something in the power of Hanukkah that I can tap into to make sure that all of those beautiful things that I wanted to bring into my life, that were from Yavan need to sit in the tents of shame. How am I on time now? Is it 30? Is it 10:30 already?
Almost.
I have 4 minutes. Great. I would love to hear from you. Any connections, thoughts, ideas, if it made you think of anything else? I know I went quickly, so I might not have enough time for you to think. Yeah. Oh, what are the 36 lights? To explain? Yeah, so first of all, I don't know all the depth of what the B'nai Yisrael was saying, but 36 means if you count all the lights. In other words, the first night you light one, second night you light two, third night you light three. So if you count all of those, you do the math, you get to 36. And 36 is a very, you know, speaking of the Zohar, 36 is a very mystical number, Lamed Vav. It has to do with what's hidden, that original light that God put in the world. We know it wasn't light of day in the way that we know it, because sun, moon, and stars weren't until the fourth day, so it was some sort of spiritual light. Rashi says it was hidden for tzaddikim, and B'nai Yisachar says that it's in the lights of Hanukkah. Yeah.
Why was it so hard for those children to accept that Hashem, you know, ultimately plays a part in where you get into college or success in
the
world? It wasn't the kids,
it's
the parents.
The parents, it's a big, it's an important time. You
I don't know. You would have to ask those. I think it's a piece that, and me too, like I'm not saying I'm always there, that I always realize that Hashem is with me. I think it is very easy to forget that Hashem is involved, especially when we do our Hishtadlak, like then we get involved in putting in effort. Sometimes we can forget. So that's the kindest response. Like, okay.
I think the parents actually are the ones that are putting the anxiety on the kids. They're having the major anxiety. So the parents don't get it either. It's hard.
Yes, it is hard. Yes. I think we need to acknowledge. Anything else? Anybody want to add anything else? Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you. I hope we have your full time, Rabbi Fruchter. I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
I really appreciate that. We're going to take a...